And we welcome you inside another edition of the Hoopball Sacramento Kings podcast. Sam Comente here with you, alongside, as always, the incomparable, the all-knowing Jill Adge. And then joining us on our Friday show, we have a very special guest, a funny man. He's a stand-up comedian, an actor, a writer for Real Punk News. He's the host of a podcast himself, the Hard Talk podcast for Hard Times Podcast Network. That rolls off the tongue, Johnny. I'm not going to lie to you.
Sorry.
And he's got, don't be sorry. And he's got some shows going on tonight. Our guest is, I just said his name, but he's a Sac guy, a big Kings fan. And he's going to be doing some shows tonight in Sacramento. If you're not watching the Kings game, which I wouldn't blame you if you weren't, you can go watch Johnny either at Luna's Cafe at 8 o'clock, or then he's opening at 9:30. He's going to be busy. He's opening at Harlow's. So Luna's or Harlow's this evening, tonight in Sacramento. Our guest, Johnny Taylor Jr., will be there. Johnny, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. If the Harlow show, you should be able to catch most of the Kings' disappointing loss tonight, and then head over to Harlow's.
For some laughs to get us feeling better.
Oh, man. It's the thing about the Kings this season, it's like they're 6-9. And they simultaneously seem better and worse than their record. I don't know how you do that, but the Kings never fail to surprise me. Yeah, they are the best 6-9 team in the league, as well as the worst 6-9 team in the league, all at the same time.
Yeah, it's just this ball of emotion, mixed emotion and pain and misery. I like to say pain and misery.
You want
to
know what's almost more frustrating is, you know how I'm always saying, like, just be average, like show improvement, right?
Right.
In these last 2 weeks since November 7th, since we started our losing streak, right? They've been 18 in the defensive ranking, right? And yeah. I think it was 18, 19 for offense, which is good, right?
Right. Like, right. I mean, that shows progress.
Defense, like it bumped up because, right, the first stretch during those rough games, right? But the problem is the teams that they're losing to, the bad teams, Oklahoma Thunder during that two-week stretch is number 4 in defense in the league. Oof. And finished that two-week stretch at 4-2. The Minnesota Timberwolves 3-4 in that stretch, number 14 in the league on defense. Like, that they're getting better, but they're still allowing their opponents to get the better of them. Right. As well. So it's kind of frustrating that you're seeing the numbers increase that you want to see, but yet so is everybody else.
Right.
And so it's just frustrating as hell. But part of that too is their offense went from like top 5 during that stretch before to dropping to the late teens. And so your defense got better a little bit, but your offense completely dropped off. And so again, we've yet to see this team play two halves. Not two halves, but like both sides of the court. And that's where they're always doing one. Yay. But not the other. And then they switch over here. We got one, but not the other. Yeah. So one of these days, maybe they can figure out how to do the two together.
If you were to tell me that the Kings would be in the top 20 defensively, which I think they're right around there right now, I would have been like, oh yeah, they're definitely going to be over 500, you know, at the very least over 500. The Kings just come up with new ways to make their fan base completely crazy.
How many games have you watched this year, Johnny? Don't lie to me.
I've watched maybe 7 of the games, and I DVR all of them, so I'll do a little speed run through on most of them.
Delete that whole thing. Go over it. 8 games, just nuke them all. You don't want to go back.
Yeah, I honestly thought the Timberwolves game was one of the more frustrating games to watch. Even when they were up by 4 at the half, they were moving the ball so poorly.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this is a miracle 4-point. So I was like, oh, maybe if the Kings play even average in the second half, they can hold on to a 4-point lead. And decided to get outscored by 14 in the second half. And and here's the thing. Well, it's not all on Walton, and, you know, in the Tristan Thompson press conference, I mean, there's a lot of truths being told in that press conference. But at the same time, is Walton the guy that's going to lead this team to where they need to be? Probably not. No. I don't see a future in which, you know, there's a ticker tape parade celebrating, you know, the Luke Walton Kings doing anything. So,
outside of them getting that Warriors, you know, if they had the Warriors lineup back then, outside of them, you know, magically getting multiple All-Stars and that, like, you're not seeing it maximized, right? Like, that's,
Go ahead.
Right now, it just looks like he's throwing everything at the wall.
Right. Desperation. Like, and you know, if Kings fans know anything, there's this devil you know kind of situation with Walton, where if people don't think it can get worse from Walton, it can.
That's a challenge for him.
Right.
He doesn't mess around when, you know, if someone thinks he can't get stupider, he goes, well, watch this.
Yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and have Marvin Bagley run the point and just piss everybody off.
Right. Yeah. And I have no idea. And I mean, just keeping Bagley on the team at this point, and I get it. There's probably no market, or the market's very limited, but having that toxicity and on your team, it's doing nobody any good, you know?
Yeah, no. And it's, Jill's got some opinions
right
on it
now. Well, no, and it's my thing right now is it's like, I get they're doing this whole big thing on rebounding, but it's like they're ignoring anything else a player does outside of rebounding. Like, oh, cool, you brought in a rebounder, but he's not great at defense. So, like, you know what I mean? And I'm not just calling out one person. Like, it's all of our power forwards outside of, like, maybe Metu. I don't necessarily want to throw him in. But like Thompson is part of some of our worst defensive lineups, but right. He can rebound. So cool. Like, so, I mean, like I, it's just weird to me that it's like, oh, we, you know, I'm only playing rebounders, but it's like, okay, you can't preach to me defense and I'm going to pull a guy out after a couple seconds because he missed an assignment or didn't play defense. But yet, you know, I'll play this vet who's making the same mistakes and doing things, but he can rebound. So, hey, like,
right.
Let's let it go. So, like, to me, that's the part of like the accountability that like frustrates me is it's you just see it with some and not others. And I get it because stars won't necessarily or like your team stars won't necessarily get the same kind of treatment. But I don't know. I just think it's weird that all of a sudden now it's the rebounding that's causing us to lose.
right.
Well, to touch on that, Jill, Luke's come out and said he wants Marvin on the court because he can rebound and he wants to get the good rebounders out there. However, in these past two games that Marvin's played a decent amount of minutes, he had 5 rebounds against Minnesota and then he had 3 rebounds against Detroit. So he has 8 rebounds in 2 games. Tristan Thompson
and
in
how
last
many minutes?
Tristan sure. Thompson last game alone had 9 rebounds. He had more rebounds than Marvin Bagley. In just last game. So, right. the rebounding thing, Marvin is good at rebounding, but he hasn't even done that. And I don't even think that's the actual reason. I just think he's full of shit and doesn't want to admit
that's
fact
what I'm saying. Like, so it just falls on like deaf, like it's weird, right? Like deaf ears. Like it's just
it's bizarre.
Weird.
You could say you want more athleticism or you want a little bit more of a scoring punch. Sure. Because then even there, you know, you might not even necessarily see that so much as see that in the stat sheet, but just, you know, you can kind of feel it on the court that the team is better offensively.
And really, it's not even our bigs that weren't rebounding. It was our guards.
Yeah,
and
they don't
rebound
at all.
And of course, yes, we don't have other wings, but like, I mean, and it was like, I understand we had criticisms of Harkless and all that kind of stuff. And then it was, oh, he's sick, right? But he played through the last 2 games and he's been sick and all this stuff. And then it was like, and there were injuries, right? So again, you're going to need him to do more than you normally do. 1, while he's sick. 2, while there's 2 other people out in Davis and Halliburton. Totally understandable. Players need to step up. Okay, but those players come back, and then you're supposedly not sick anymore, but hey, you're out of the rotation completely. Not even like I'm not, you know, going to cut down your minutes, even if you're throwing him in off the bench. Like, you still can't even throw a defensive guy in there if we need it for maybe 5 minutes of a game when a team's going on a run, or you can't throw Len in there when you're being dominated in the paint. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just weird to me that it goes from either you're in the rotation or you're completely out. Like, there's no, I could throw you in, you know, I mean, and then like last game where they had Karl-Anthony Towns at 2 fouls within the first 3 minutes of the game. They did not go back inside at all after that. Like, I understand a coach shouldn't have to yell at you, like, to recognize that. But it's like, you also didn't put anybody in that's going to be going against him in the paint either. Like, once you took Holmes out, you put Thompson in, and, like, he wasn't really going at Towns or Reed. Like, maybe if you put Len in there, he could get a third foul. Like, I just think that there was things that, like, maybe you could have tried to maximize to get their best player off the court.
Right.
And, like, that wasn't, I don't know. Like, we didn't see any adjustments made to try and capitalize those kind of things. And that frustrates me, you know, players, coach, everything like that, that how do you, like, not even trying to exploit it.
Go ahead, Johnny, please. We haven't, we haven't let you talk.
I think the roster obviously remains not very balanced, where you've got, you either got very big people or very small people for the most part. When you're running out Buddy and Terrence Davis, who are both 6'4", and they're playing a lot of minutes at that three, yeah, your rebounding is going to suffer for that, you know. And Buddy's a good rebounder for his size, but he's in no way a good rebounder in the context of other, you know, small forwards. So, I think Walton's having a hard time getting both, you know, defense and rebounding, because his roster is weird. You know, he's got a weird roster.
It almost was like a middle finger to the front office. Like, well, hey, if this is what you're giving me, like, well, this is what I'm going to throw out there then.
Yeah, Jill and I have said
you're not giving me any wings.
We've said that in the past, Johnny. If you remember when Jaeger was the coach in like the preseason, he was running out five guys that were all like power forwards, because that was for sure a middle finger and like a statement to the office. Like, this is what you gave me to work with. And I don't know what you want me to do.
They had said that those guys could play small
forward. Yeah, he said Marvin Bagley could play the three and stuff that wasn't obviously true. And yeah, it's crazy that not much has really changed, because they have like four active centers every game. What other team does that in this modern NBA?
They don't even use them all, right?
And they don't even, like, I like Damian Jones. I think Damian Jones should play.
Right.
Especially on Wednesday against Minnesota, I think he could have been valuable against Anthony Towns. Or at least you could have used him to, you know, draw, you know, use out fouls if you need to have someone get in foul trouble, have it be him.
And that's where I have a hard time believing that he's not at least as mobile as a 30-year-old Tristan Thompson.
Oh, yeah. He's,
but he's giving you size. You know what I mean? Like, it's, oh, but he's mobile and can't guard outside. Like, show that to me. Right. I mean, like, at least he's adding more size, but he's the young body and he seems pretty mobile.
Yeah, I get that Jones isn't a good rebounder for his size, but he is mobile. You know, I mean, you watch him play, like, if nothing else, there's going to be, you know, effort rotating from him. And, you know, you see Tristan Thompson, and I mean, I know it's the eye test and I don't have numbers to support it, but if you see that there needs to be a rotation, Tristan Thompson just stands. He's like, okay, I'm going to box out. And a guy shooting a wide open 20 footer. It's like, no, man, go run out there, you know. But yeah, I get him. He's like, then who's going to rebound it, you know?
There was the one play where he yelled at everyone because it was a long shot. And as Jerry Reynolds used to say, long shot, long rebound. It happens pretty much every time there's a long shot. And it was a three that back iron. Thompson was down in the paint and went over him. Buddy didn't react. No one else reacted. They ended up getting a second chance point. And then Tristan Thompson looked at him and like, what, you know, I think he yelled like, what are we doing? I can't be the guy that stood there.
Yeah,
I can't be the only guy grabbing every rebound. Like, I don't know why I need to tell you this. I wanted to ask you, though.
Or if he blocks out his person and did his job, but the rest of you stand around and, like, don't move. Yeah, I mean, that's frustrating as hell. Yeah.
Go get the ball. It's like watching sometimes, you know, YMCA basketball. Johnny, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned the Tristan Thompson thing after the game, the post-game spiel. That was probably the most epic rant we've had from a player in Sacramento since DeMarcus Cousins would just say a lot of stuff after games.
Right.
What did you think of it? Did you think that are you okay with it? First off, that he would do that?
Oh, yeah.
Be that like lethal.
I like the fact that it was real, you know, it was, I don't know if you guys are pro wrestling fans, but it was almost like watching a pro wrestler go off script, you know, and
Okay.
And do a shoot interview when, you know, you're expecting them to say all the right things of like, yeah, we have each other's backs and, you know, we play for our coach, but the way he kind of went off the rails, I mean, I was into it. And think what you will about Tristan Thompson. He wasn't telling lies.
No.
You
know? Yeah.
I don't know if he's holding himself accountable as much as he should be, but, you know, there's no lies detected as far as, you know, if you need the coach to light a fire under you to for effort, then you're probably in the wrong business, you know?
So yep. Why?
Yeah.
No,
it sounded
sorry.
Like a Mike. It sounded like a Mike Malone press conference. Honestly, yeah. It very. Yeah, I mean, he used
why,
to call
why do that
anybody
to me,
and everybody out. I mean, it was. And then I listened to him now. He just got ejected, you know, from last night's game. But like, they'll be up by 20, and he's still calling his team out after a press conference. Like, I love it. Totally. I mean,
a different sport, but Bruce Arians just said this past week about the Bucks because they got upset by Washington. He said, and I quote, "We must be the stupidest football team." That can you imagine Luke Walton saying anything of that level? He would never do that because that's obviously not what he believes. Yeah. Not publicly. It's not what he believes. It's not how he was trained. He played in the NBA. However, we are at that point where a comment like that is what I think this team needs. It was something the reason why I always loved Dave Yeager, Johnny, and Jill, I think, knows this by this point. I liked him as a coach.
Oh, yeah, me too.
He didn't beat around the bush. He was direct with these players. He told them what he wanted. He got on their case. He said, you know, I can't take you to this point until you understand this concept. And he took a roster that was not good, that was worse than the roster they currently have, and played them at a way higher level than they're currently playing with Luke Walton. That's
he
coaching.
He didn't force them to play a style that, right, that he
no,
admitted.
No, he adapted
like,
to them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he admitted, like he said, I want to go A, B, and C, but I can't go B and C until you get A. And then he referenced, so I'm not just going to go out there and run you. The very next year, he went out and, you know, he ran them because he admitted, like, if they're not going to get this, like, at some point, he's like, it's been 3 years, like, you know, for some of these guys, like, it's not going to happen. And so I'm going to utilize that talent to the level. I mean, and it's, yeah, we haven't seen that here. You know what I mean? Like, it was always the, we got to do this because this is going to, you know, make us hang around in the playoffs. And I get that, but like, we can't even get there in the first place. And at that point, I think it's coach. And yes, we all know it's roster. Like, it's a mix, but I mean, one thing you can change right now, right? One thing, you know, you might have to wait until December 15th to change. Because right. I think Monty's admitted himself the roster is an issue because he tried to trade. You know, he went for the big trade in the offseason that didn't happen. So he admitted, I mean, and in that own way, he admitted that three, you know, the core three of we have of over 20 million wasn't working. Right. And unfortunately, you might just have to wait a little longer. But yeah, but you're not seeing any adjustments from Walton. And players can say, oh, he yells at us privately all the time. Well, it's not doing anything.
Right, right. Like, not having a direct impact.
We're still hearing the same sound bites after every game.
Yeah. Let me ask you some. Oh, do you have some, Johnny? I'm sorry.
Oh, the 39 and 43 Yeager team the
you're
year
fun.
Before he got fired. That roster sucked. Like, if you look at that roster, give Luke Walton that roster. Tell me how many wins he has.
30.
He has 27. He has 28. He's not going to win 39 games with that roster. No. You know, and then, I mean, yeah, losing Malone was horrible. But getting Yeager, I thought was positive. And I thought he really did as much as he could have with that roster that was either he had young players that weren't at their potential yet, like Fox, or he had, you know, I mean, we're like, Shumpert got traded and we're like, oh my God, it's a tragedy. That guy
would have been,
and that's how bad that roster was because he wouldn't have played 10 minutes on any other team that was sniffing the playoffs. So
yeah, it was.
And Bagley had his best year that year,
right,
his rookie year, coming
and
off the bench.
He hated Dave Yeager.
Coming off the bench, right? And that was like Yogurt. The whole thing. was part of the reason for the firing. And it was like, that was your best year. That was the best year. And it worked.
You got the most out of here.
I'm going to ask you a couple questions here, Johnny. But first, I'm going to backtrack real quick because you should speak about Mike Malone. It will always blow me away, obviously, that they had him and they let him go. What blows me away more is that was the first thing Vivek Ranadive did as owner. He hit it out of the ballpark with that hire. You really can't do better than that. Your first go around as an owner in a league hiring a coach. I mean, you look around other owners, what their first moves are. They usually go back and they're like, well, you know, I learned there, you know, I can't do this, or I shouldn't have hired that guy, or I shouldn't have made that trade. That was an A+. Yeah. And then he just shit on it and let it go, you know, within 2 years. It makes it worse is my point, which is what we need, right? To always make things that are already terrible even worse, because that's the backbone
That's the King's way.
Yeah, it's the King's way. It's what we do best. Commitment to excrement. How do I want to phrase this question? How much longer do you think Walton's going to last? How much longer do you want him to last?
Well, I never root against the Kings. I want them to win every single game.
But,
you know, if there was a side effect to losing and the side effect was Walton getting fired, I'd be fine with it. But the Kings will never cease to amaze me because the next coach, you can't just fire another one. You got to get the right guy or gal. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So, you know, this next one's got to be good, or we're in a worse position than we are currently. And I think Kings fans are keenly aware of that. So although I want Walton to go, I fear what's next, you know?
Do you have a coach?
What jazz band could be next?
Right. What could happen? They're like, you know,
Jill will not do this until he gets fired. But do you have people in mind that you would like as the head coach? You said I am a huge Becky Hammond fan.
Yeah, Becky. I would be really into Becky Hammond. I would be over the moon.
That would be great.
Hammond to get a shot with the Kings.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I mean, his name escapes me, but there was that assistant from Toronto, you know, that I can't remember his name right now.
Under Nurse?
Yeah. What was his name?
Jill? This is a Jill task.
Hold on. Yeah.
I was always a fan, too, of the Boston Celtics assistants behind Brad Stevens when Stevens was there.
Yeah, I mean, at least
they had a great bench.
It's that culture of good coaching, you know? And, you know, Walton, it's not fair. It's not fair to look at him as a Kerr guy, because that roster, you know what I mean? When Walton was there, it was a cheat code.
Is that who you're thinking of?
Adrian Griffin. Yeah. Adrian Griffin used to play for the Bulls. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I don't want another kind of retread, you know.
No, of course not.
But at the same time, part of me is like, who could be worse than Walton? And the Kings will find him, you know.
That's very true.
If there's somebody worse, the Kings will find that person. So I don't want Walton here anymore, but I'm also afraid of what they would replace him with, because I know how they do things.
You would hope that McNair obviously is the sole person making the final decision there, but we don't know that.
You know, I have my list ready, so I'm just
I know you do, Jill. I'm excited. And I know Becky Hammond's probably on it. I think the storyline of Becky Hammond coming to Sacramento would be great, because they're just already such a progressive franchise. Something that even Vivek's, you know, mismanagement, you can't erase that from what he's done. You know, he's pushed this team very much into the future and how they operate on every front. So they then have the first woman head coach in major sports. That's great. And she's obviously qualified. There's no question.
She's way
more qualified than Luke Walton has ever been to coach a basketball team.
Yeah.
Ever. That's what's crazy to me.
If Gasol's telling you to hire her, I would put my money on him.
No, she's fantastic. She is fantastic.
And I don't think Vivek is a bad guy. I like him as a person. I think he's cool. And I think his ideas about social justice, I agree with almost always. I just think he's not a good owner, you know? And when you don't have an owner that makes the right decisions for your basketball team, it gets sticky. And it's been a bad, how long has he been there now? Eight, seven years?
2013.
Eight years.
God, it's been a rough 8 years of a lot of weird meddling. And, you know, I'm so glad the Kings are still here, but God, sell the team. You know what I mean?
What do you think the next move is? Was my other question. Where do they go from here? Other than Walton and the coaching change that is potentially going to come. Is there a trade? Are you a Simmons fan? Are you a fan of getting rid of Buddy and Marvin as quick as possible?
I think Buddy's played real well, honestly, for this new role he's in and playing out of position literally half the time he's out there. But you know, you look at you get rid of Walton. That's one thing. It doesn't cure everything though. Mm-hmm. The roster's still weird. I do like Simmons. And I see a lot of people, a lot of Kings fans are like, I like Simmons, but I really wish he was a knockdown shooter. And I'd be like, if he was a knockdown shooter, the Sixers wouldn't be trying to trade him. Right? You know what I mean? It's like, if he had that too, he'd be one of the five best players in the whole league. You know what I mean? So
very true.
It's one of those things where, you know, Simmons is Simmons. And I think he helps the Kings in a lot of ways if he's on the team. And I think in a weird way, him as a small forward that can kind of – he and Barnes could kind of alternate, like, who's guarding who. I think it makes them a better team, even if you had to trade Fox for him. I think the Kings get better.
Okay.
Honestly, and that's my opinion. I like Fox, but, you know, we're 15 games into the season. And the Kings seem to operate a little bit better when he's not out there. And that's starting to become a concern for me, you know, which that's not what you want out of your max player. You know, you don't out of your max player. You don't want the team to look a little bit more cohesive when he's not out there. And I'm still willing to let him work it out and let the team work it out. But 15 games now, I'm starting to get a little concerned. So,
yeah, I will say Monty McNair is a man that's probably not afraid to just hit the red button right, and just blow it up. He came in and made the promise to Vivek, I'm going to build this team around De'Aaron Fox. However, do I think that would stop Monty McNair from shipping Fox to get Ben Simmons? No. And I don't think Vivek would meddle in that, because I think he would love to have Ben Simmons, and that would alleviate or elevate Davion Mitchell to the starting lineup. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen that could come off a trade like that does excite me. I will admit it, Johnny. Not that you said it and I didn't say it. I could just say I'm playing off of what you said.
Right.
I agree. I don't know. We haven't touched about Fox for Simmons specifically, Jill, I don't think. We try to not mention Ben Simmons, actually, if we can, because it goes down this incredible rabbit hole.
If we don't want to mention Ben Simmons,
no.
There's other people I'd like more.
No. So, I mean, but that's kind of the one out there. I mean, that's the one name that everybody knows is out there. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm still
we heard about the whole, whatever that report was about Detroit and them. I mean, I still think that they should try. I mean, if that really was something, you make that a three-team deal. And you try and work yourself in there, and you take Simmons, you send Buddy out, Detroit sends Grant to the Sixers, you send Bagley to Detroit with a pick, like they drop money, they drop salary, we get them, we're not giving up
that'd be
anything
great.
Totally crazy. Like, I mean, that's a pipe dream, but I mean, like, if it ever got that low, I mean, I would laugh if like that's all that they accepted from Detroit and like that was it. Like right, out of all this, like if right. that's how it ends.
The whole time they're like, we just want a Jeremy Grant.
I mean, there's got to be ways like, like I would be fine with that, but it just seems weird. Like if you're throwing him on top of like Tobias Harris and like, other, I don't know. Right. But I mean, if you could work other pieces into it.
And then there's the whole philosophy of like, okay, so like, let's say McNair makes the decision. Okay. We're going to part with Fox. okay, don't stop at Simmons. Start sniffing around. There's 100%. A market. You know what I mean? Yep. So you might end up with something that you want even more, you know?
You didn't even know about. Yeah.
Right, right.
You might unearth something.
Right. Well, and just getting – even if you did do Fox for Simmons, like, you can't just end at Simmons. You still have to work from there, too.
Right.
That it's like, that's not going to be the fix it. Right? Like, there's right. so many other, you know, as we said, issues.
Right.
Roster, right. But, yeah. I mean, that could be step one, but I don't know.
Sending out Fox obviously doesn't fix the team's problems.
No,
that
no.
just right. shows that you're willing to just destroy everything and try something different, which we're all reaching the point where we're like, why would we not do that? Why are we thinking what we have is working? Because obviously it's not.
Right. Yeah.
Which is personally my belief why you don't wait on the coaching hire, because or coaching switch, excuse me, coaching fire. Yeah. Let's see someone else handle this for just a little bit before the deadline at least, and then make a judgment there. Be like, okay, this team really can't win with, you know, even a different voice, even though it's just going to be Alvin Gentry. That's something different. You can answer that question. Is it really Luke Walton completely, or is it just this roster's terrible? I think it's a mix of both. But right. what are we waiting? The whole thing, like, if they keep losing, then they're going to fire Walton. If that's what you're waiting around for, then just
do
it now.
You need to see two more right. losses.
Yeah.
I mean, what did that tell you that you didn't already know? Yeah.
Here's the thing. Best case scenario, the Kings are, what, you know, sniffing 10th or 9th, you know? Even Maybe. If things start going real good. I think, you know, real good for them is probably, you know, 10th or 9th in that play-in. But it has the potential to go real bad. You know, like we have 30 win potential. All it takes is
hell yeah.
The slide.
Yeah.
Keeps sliding. We're down to 39 after our last game, according right. to Cleaning the Glass, based right. on our numbers. It yeah, went from 40 to 39.
Yeah.
Going the wrong way.
Yeah. I think the ceiling is low and the floor is increasingly like the depths of Hades.
It's an impressive floor. In the
depths right, of right, right. It's so, I think at best the Kings are looking at, you know, maybe winning 40 games, and a lot of stuff has to go right for them to do that. So it's concerning.
Yeah.
I was going to ask.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joel. But no, do you know what's funny though? It's like what happened last year. Like we had heard these same kind of things. Oh, like will he stay or really go? But all that money. Remember, like that's when we first started hearing back the money was with the first losing streak.
Right.
Like, oh, well, you know, like there's still that question of, you know, instead of like it was the same kind of time frame and the same kind of article where it was he's on the hot seat, but there's money. Like someone still was willing to throw that story out there, right?
Right.
Regardless of a firing happening. What's going on this year? We have a week of everyone's on the same page, all of this stuff. All of a sudden they start losing again. Some random person throws that story out again. Ooh, yeah. He's on the hot seat. And what happened last time? We all thought they were going to lose
right.
to good teams. And what did they do?
Right. Yeah.
They ended up going on the winning streak but it didn't prove anything, right? Like it was a fallacy. Like we're still seeing the same kind of patterns with this team. So, I mean, I will honestly laugh because we're all assuming they're going to keep losing based on the teams they're playing. If right. they go on a winning streak and then it's like, oh, he's not on the hot seat again. And then they have another losing one. Like, are we just going to see the same cycle?
Right. And
it
doesn't really matter who the Kings play. Like I've stopped caring about who's good and who's bad because that doesn't matter in Kings land. It's one of those things where they could win 7 out of 8. And then the next time I come on the show, you know, the Kings are, 13 and 10. And we're like, so should Walton get an extension? You know, like the narrative can change so fast. So. Being a Kings fan is just the goddamn worst.
Yeah. Someone's got to make that a poster or a bumper sticker or something.
Yeah, being the King.
Put it on the jerseys.
That's my thing up there right now. I know everything happens for a reason, but like this is regarding Kings fans.
Right.
What the fuck? Like,
right, right.
You can't tell me all of this is happening for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why doesn't this? God hear my prayers?
Send so many every day, ignoring all of it. Walton is impressive. I like to say that he's impressive with how inconsistent he is, as you were just saying, because he can and he has win or lose nine games as a head coach and then just as quickly win seven straight. It's like, what are you doing? Do you know what you're doing? Are you blacking out and just like waking, like coming to you like, holy shit, how did we do that? And then immediately losing it again. Like, it's almost like it's by accident somehow that his prayers are getting answered. And they just he doesn't keep praying. So then they go back to losing. He's not a good coach. He's just not. He's not a smart guy.
Yeah. Well, like a nice guy. He's a fine assistant. I mean, I think he's perfect. Terrific. Like, he knows basketball. I mean, like, I don't friendly. Think anyone can doubt that stuff, right? Like, the dude knows the game.
Totally. No doubt.
But some assistants who go to be like, it just doesn't work. And then you go back and have lifelong careers as assistant coaches. I mean, that would be my guess for what ends up happening for him. Maybe someone else will give him a chance.
Steve Kerr.
But I very much think that he will, you know, could easily land a bench somewhere and be perfectly fine.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I tweeted
it's just
out.
Not here.
I tweeted out the other day out of frustration. I was like, Luke Walton is a terrible coach or something, just something very just succinct.
True.
Frustration venting.
Right.
And somebody on Twitter is like, okay, then you try to coach the team. I'm like, well, no, I'm not qualified. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mean I want to coach the team, dummy.
Right.
I mean, I want somebody else.
What a counterpoint. I love people. Those are trolls. I mean, they really are. Yeah. Well, you do it then. That's not my point.
Yeah. And to me, like, you're seeing something like with Griffin and the Pelicans, right? Like, you can see people succeed in certain places and then completely fall on their face in others. Like, it's not going to work everywhere. It's happened to Thibodeau. Like, it's happened to Mike D'Antoni. And then he went and won Coach of the Year like 2 years after.
Right.
Like, we've seen people excel in some places. Like, sometimes it's just not the right fit. Like, and that's all there is to it.
Totally. Funny you say, funny you say Mike D'Antoni, because that guy could be on a list. It is Monty McNair. We're talking about a Rocket guy.
He might be on the list.
I mean, he's an advisor with the Pelicans right now.
Like, is he?
He might actually be on the list.
He's a coaching advisor. I mean, as his first.
It's a weird. There's weird things going on over there. Coach. Yeah. What is Rick Adelman up to? Does anyone know? Is he up to anything? How old is
his son? His son's coaching.
I know. David. Right? Is it David? That would be great, actually. I mean, I don't even know how qualified David is. I know he's been an assistant for a little bit.
He is.
Under Mike Malone now, too. So that, I mean, there's
he's more than qualified.
A lot of storylines going on here. You haven't figured it out since.
Mike Malone, his two biggest last year that he tried to pump up was Wes
Unselt,
and David.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. There you go.
Maybe he's on the list. We don't know. Let's
similar to like what Becky and them do, like he takes over coaching duties when he's ejected from a game. So,
right.
I mean,
oh, he's the associate head coach?
Yeah.
So,
I'm gonna start
like
doing
what
research.
What Wes used to do, David does. So,
start doing research on David Allen. 40 years old. He's young. When he went to Jesuit, I guess that isn't surprising. Cool. Yeah, I'm gonna add him to my list. I'm just gonna start a list. I haven't started a list, but
he's like a Wes. He's just been around the game forever, right?
Go ahead
like,
and add me to the list.
These guys grew up in it.
That Twitter guy is asking you to.
I'm on the list.
I don't think you could do much worse than Luke Walton, if I'm being honest with you.
I might not.
I mean, he it's just, if you look at what he did, obviously he played, but in terms of like grinding his teeth and earning it in the coaching ranks, he didn't do that. He was an assist. And that when people do the whole, well, he's 39-4 with the greatest team probably to ever step foot on a court.
Right.
He just had to get out of the way. And
completely
that's what he
different
did.
Than trying to turn teams around.
Exactly.
I mean, he's shown he can coach like teams that are filled with great players.
I could coach a team with good talent. Like Steve Kerr.
But there's a certain kind of coach that can take like your average rosters and, you know, get them to 500.
I don't care.
I wish
what
we had a Mike Malone.
Yeah. Oh,
it happens every year in the NBA. You have 500 teams going to the playoffs, right? Like they figure it out.
Or Dave Yeager. Steve Kerr is not, this is just a quick aside, in case any Warrior fan happened to listen to this podcast, Steve Kerr is not a good head coach. He just has Steph Curry. And as has been visibly shown now, when he doesn't have Steph Curry, he has no chance. When he does have Steph Curry, shake the man's hand. He's terrific at coaching.
Does seem to help.
Yeah. I mean, am I lying, Johnny? I mean, shit. I think Steve Kerr's awesome. And he was a lethal three-point shooter in his day for – obviously, the dynastic Bulls of the 90s. Yes, Joel. Your microphone is off.
Sorry, the dogs were barking. I will say, like, there are things that he does, and whether it's him or his staff, like without Steph Curry, they were still a top five defensive team last year.
Mike Brown.
With all those role players.
Yeah.
I don't think it's Mike Brown. But Brian. I will just say, but I'm just saying, like, that there are things that he was able to get.
True.
That staff was able to get out of that team without a star.
Yeah, I think Steve Kerr's a great coach.
Doesn't happen here, right? Like, that's. Yeah.
You think he's a great coach?
It's just a lot easier when you have Steph Curry.
Yeah. You know?
Life's easier.
Like, the NBA is better with Steph Curry, and yeah, life as a
completely
franchise.
Different culture, too.
And they just, and then Clay's going to come back in a couple weeks now, and everything's going to revert back to like 2016. The Cavs are also kind of good now, somewhat. So,
and as a big Fox fan, I would still say, if you got Curry instead of Fox, I bet the Kings are over 500 right now.
Yes, I think that I think that Luke Walton would look a lot smarter if he had Steph Curry.
Right, right.
So tonight, let's talk a little bit about tonight's game, and then we'll move on to the Jill's water cooler on this Friday show. We didn't even talk about the Kings on Wednesday, but that's okay. I don't think we really want to live in the past. They lost by 10 to Minnesota.
I don't think anyone needs the
bleh. Yeah. We usually review the games, Johnny, but like recently, what's the point? Am I purposely trying to be sad?
Yeah. I'm having a good day.
Yeah. I mean, well, I'm going to ruin it right now and talk about the game. So they play the Raptors, who just played last night. We're playing, I mean, very a la Kings. Played a really good first half against Utah, and then the wheels kind of came off in the second half because Utah's obviously a fantastic team, and Toronto lost. Were they in? They were in Utah, obviously. I don't think they were in Toronto. That would have been a farther trek for them to Sacramento. But it's a back-to-back for Toronto. They're 7-9, which is where the
and
Kings
no
are trying
OG.
To get, and they have no OG or no Precious. Precious, do you know how to say his last name, Jill? Achiuwa, something like that?
Yeah, it's close.
That's my best guess.
I just call him Precious.
I like that. I think that's fun.
Precious. Like share, you know.
I was going to say Achiuwa, so
that's Achiuwa, sure.
That sounds right.
But yeah, they're a little shorthanded. Scotty Barnes is great.
He's good. Very good.
Raptor fans have already forgotten about the Suggs or Barnes controversy. It's Scotty Barnes is the dude. He's a really fun player to watch. And then they have still, of course, Fred VanVleet, Gary Trent, who Vlade Divac deemed not worthy of keeping in 2018. After he drafted his teammate Marvin Bagley in the first round, is now one of the better young shooting guards in the NBA because that's just how things go.
The Kings didn't need a second round pick, didn't you know? They didn't need any more young players.
They were a super team just
sold to us, you know, and we didn't have a first round pick the next year either. And we were told we didn't need that one either. We were just ready.
Oh my God.
When you got Justin James, you don't need much.
You don't need anything. And Justin Jackson.
Justin James.
Give me all the Justins.
Any Justin with a J last name. The Kings will make sure that you
regret. But see, that's how like crazy like this team was being run at the time, is they thought they had enough talent that they actually didn't need.
And then for like 2 months, we all look crazy, and Vlade looked like a genius, and we're like, holy crap, he was right. Like, this team's really good. And then reality set in.
But you still need talent.
I know.
People don't throw away draft picks. Right. You still need talent.
We're done. We're done accumulating talent. We're done. I'm exhausted. Gary Trent being a substantially better NBA player than Marvin Bagley. Isn't that crazy?
I didn't see that coming, but
nobody did. That's fair.
In King's Land, it makes sense.
The second round pick is better than anyone. Right? I mean, that happens a lot in King's history. Isaiah Thomas was the best draft pick in the year that they took. I think it was Jimmer and Tyler Honeycutt. I think that was that draft. Isaiah Thomas was obviously way better than those guys. Yeah. I bet you haven't even heard Tyler Honeycutt's name, Johnny, until right now.
Most of that I wouldn't say most of that draft, but a lot of that draft where he was taken last.
Yeah,
true. Surpassed, just crazy.
Maybe the Kings should only pick in the second round. Okay,
that could be a thing.
We'll discuss this. Raptors tonight at home. Black jerseys, Sactown unis are being debuted. I've told you all because I'm going to be at the game. I'm going to look to try and buy one if it's not outrageously expensive. It probably will be, although it'll be pretty easy for me to move around this arena because it's going to be empty. Apparently nobody's bought tickets.
Yeah,
fuck you, Vivek, and the team in general for being terrible. But that's fine. I'll just move up a couple rows.
Right.
What, though, Johnny and Jill, you know, we want to see the team win. What are the keys for Sacramento tonight to beat a relatively good and competitive and very well coached Toronto Raptor team? Johnny, go ahead. You start.
I think if they can defend consistently,
nope.
And, and rebound a little bit. That's probably nope there. And if Fox can play just okay.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. I mean, we're burying the lead a lot here, but fact is, if Fox even plays better than awful for most of this season, the Kings are probably 500 or better right now. I mean, all warts and all, mm-hmm. as bad of all the other things. If Fox just plays not even as well as he played last year, if he plays just sub that, the Kings are still a lot better than they are. So if Fox, I'll go simple. If Fox plays well tonight, I think the Kings win.
Okay. I was going to say that analysis was like the bare minimum of expectations. If right. we rebound a little, if we do like, right. that's right. what I mean. I don't blame you for thinking that way. Jill, what do you I'll think?
Say, yeah. The same thing I said last game.
Set the tone.
Value the ball. Right. And we did not do, I mean, we had,
I guess, a really good defensive team.
Like 8 turnovers or something again. And like, we're so again, like, and this is the thing with the Raptors, another lengthy team, right?
Yes.
Who
very lengthy.
Gets their hands.
Chris know, Boucher. They,
yes. And Siakam's back, like, they're even their backup point guard, like, right now they have 4 going, right? It's Fred VanVleet. Then you have Dragon on the bench, who's kind of like,
I don't think he really plays.
Doesn't. But then you have Malachi Flynn and
Delano Banton has been
Banton, yes,
pretty good. A rookie.
6'9" point guard.
Point guard.
Yeah. He could run the floor. And like, I mean, his length is crazy when he's defending you. So again, like, but there, this is a team where I think, what did they say that? I think like the average height of the team is like, I don't know, 6'7", 6'8" or something.
Yeah, that would
like
make that. Sense.
Like, crazy. And so like the opposite of us.
Right. The exact height the Kings could use.
So you're going to have to be physical. Yeah. Like, you're going to have to give it back, and you're on your home court, set the tone, right? Which you've not been doing again. Like,
Jill, you were,
again, you want to keep saving this guy. And you got, I mean, you got to see me. It and coming at home. And all we keep hearing is, oh, the crowd needs to be there and give it to us. Like, I get it, but we've been doing that for how many years?
Yeah. Make Ooh. Me want to go.
Like, that it's like, yeah, you got to show it too.
Right.
You got to show it too. I mean, you're in a pandemic. Some people don't want to spend the money. Some people don't want to go in crowds. Some, I mean, like, there's a multitude of reasons. You have to make people want to say this is worth going compared to all of those reasons. Right. So
if I'm going to risk my life to go watch you play, right. be good.
I mean, that's like, right. That, I mean,
yeah.
So it's yeah. They,
Jill,
they
you were a go. Fan of Svi, right? Or Svi, the mm-hmm. Russian guy. I will never try to pronounce that guy's last name, yeah. but he is on the, you obviously understand what I'm saying. No one else will understand what I'm getting to here, but he's on the Raptors. They have a lot of players that I know Jillian Edge is a fan of and has banged the table for the Kings to try and get in the past. Siakam, as you mentioned, is back. He is not played very well. He seems rather rusty, which is understandable.
Yeah.
Last night against Utah, they lost, they ended up losing 119-103 in Utah. Siakam played 31 minutes, was 2-14 from the field, 0-4 from three, had 4 points.
Gary
Trent
had
31 points.
Have they said if he's
playing back to
backs
yet? Right. I haven't
heard
anything.
I mean, that's I don't know, but that's something for us to watch, I guess.
It might be actually better without him playing.
It seems like the stars are aligning for the Kings to get a win, and that always means
they'll lose. The Raptors fans are already asking for him to be traded. It's been a couple games back for him, and they're already asking him to be traded.
My buddy that I'm going to this game with is a Raptor fan. He grew up in Toronto, and he is done with Siakam. And when I was talking to him about how the Kings and Raptors make a good pair as like trade partners, and I was like, we could use Siakam. He was like, you can have him. I got
to use a center. We could use Siakam.
You can have Damian Jones. I'll take Pascal Siakam. We'll call
right.
And we'll move along. Very nice of you, Canada, for being so nice. It's, you know, I said the Wolves game was probably going to come down to the finish just because of how the teams had been playing going in. That's what happened. I think this game is going to be probably similar, although the Kings have the advantage of having the day off yesterday. They, theoretically speaking, of course, because as you said, Johnny, it seems like the stars are aligning, but of course the Kings won't pay attention. They won't look up at the sky. You should be able to wear them down come the second half. You're a terrible second half team though, so that kind of counters that out in a way. I don't even know. Like at this point, I've reached the point where I don't even know what to predict with this team because they are rather unpredictable. I just hope it's a good game. I hope it's entertaining. I hope we can. Fox did have a good game on Wednesday at 26, but no one else really played well. Tyrese had a rough game. Rashawn didn't play well. Buddy Hield got going. And it was the strategy in the third quarter of have Buddy keep shooting threes and hope he just makes them and then we can come back. Right. It worked.
You know, and I love Tyrese so much. One of my favorites.
Don't kids. We all?
But, you know, when he was like, chemistry issues, I say check the box score. Here's the thing.
You sure?
That was one box score. One box score this season has looked good
the Hornets
both
game.
Of them at the same time. And the rest haven't. So I'm not sure if it's chemistry or what, but when one of them's on, the other one's off. And there was another backcourt that Kings fans were excited about way back in the day. I'm going to predate a lot of people's memories, but they tried to pair Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf with Mitch Richmond and talk about chemistry issues. It did not go well. It was one of those things where one night one was good, the other night the other one wasn't good, and most nights the team wasn't good. So I'm going to give it another 15 games, see where we're at after, you know, about 30. But part of me is starting to think maybe these guys aren't going to play very well together, and that's concerning.
Yeah, I won't.
Totally fair.
I'm not going to touch on that. You're 100% right. You did outdate me very much. I know who Mitch Richmond is. I've met him a couple times. Very good dude. But yeah, I don't know the other guy. Did the other gentleman, did he stay on the team after Richmond was shipped off?
2 years. He played for 2 years with the Kings, 95, okay. 96, 96, 97. And I think they won 38 games one of the years he was here, and then 34 games maybe the next year. But a hell of a scorer, hell of a shooter, could distribute a little bit, couldn't defend a lick. Sound familiar? Yeah, just never kind of, but you know, bad roster still, you know,
yeah.
You can't expect to win too many games.
I know you've seen him in Richmond clips and you just probably didn't even realize it.
Oh yeah, probably.
You know what I mean? Like, I know you've seen him. Yeah.
Thank you for backing me up there, Jill. I was born in 98, so don't come at me here. Okay. I'm wearing my Jay Will jersey. I understand that era of Kings basketball. That's worth remembering. It's like that's where we are right now. We're in that era of Kings basketball for the past 15 years.
It was before you were born, you're forgiven.
No, it was. But I'm saying like this era of basketball. I'm never gonna like expect someone to remember this time of tragedy for the Sacramento Kings years from now. You know, like, you don't remember Beno Udrich and John Brockman? Brockinator or whatever his nickname
John
was.
John Sammons.
Ben Odrino and Brockness Monster.
The Brockness Monster. Thank you. That was it's such a good nickname. You're like, you don't remember those guys? Those were classics. I'm like, no. Thank God you don't know about that. Okay. Anyway, let's get to the piece de resistance, the Jill's water cooler. And so, Johnny, I don't know if you've heard one of these before, if you've tuned in long enough in our episodes to hear them. But Jill is brilliant. She always has good stuff to share with us. And so that's what we're going to do here.
I'm excited.
Jill, I'm excited. I'm always excited for this.
Have either one of you guys heard about the NBA referee travel expense scandal?
I haven't heard, and I'm excited to hear.
No. Right. You should get a shorter title for it, but yes.
Okay. So I'm kind of going to give you the lead early here, and then I'll go into the background and the investigation, all that. So an Internal Revenue Service investigation nicknamed Operation Slam Dunk began in 1994 surrounding untaxed income of at least 43 NBA referees regarding downgraded first class or full fare coach plane tickets that were paid for by the NBA, with the cost difference being pocketed by the refs without reporting it on their tax returns. So, in 94, the NBA employed 54 referees. Each of them, so think about this, in 94, each of them made between $72,000 and $177,000 a year.
Okay.
Okay.
That'd suck.
So, working about 70 to 75 games a year. So, not
a bad job. Yeah.
So, the travel expenses for referees were to be reimbursed by the NBA once a travel report was submitted. So the NBA paid for a first-class airline ticket for flights lasting longer than 2 hours and then a full-fare coach seat on flights that were anything less than 2 hours. So, like, if you're traveling, you know, within California.
Oakland to Sac.
On the East Coast, like, right.
Coach.
So anything under 2 hours was coach. In turn, the referees were permitted to downgrade from first class to coach and pocket the difference. So this was considered a fringe benefit of the position and a way to supplement their income, like they were already
here. Like they needed it.
So the NBA did not withhold taxes on this income or report it to the IRS, and the referees did not declare the income on their tax returns, considering it, again, a fringe benefit provided by their employer. So this is where the referees give their stories, or at least some of the referees. So they say in 1989, IRS introduced new regulations that required an arrangement for fringe benefits supported by the NBA to be reported as income. So they're saying in 89, the IRS is saying in 89, they made this known, right? That you had to report these benefits you were getting to them. However, during that same time that these regulations were brought, you know, forward, the NBA and the referees were going through a lockout in their bargaining period. So they are saying that during the negotiations, the NBA changed the rules frequently, which resulted in them all being unclear of the process. And that caused many referees to continue the benefits as they had in the past without, you know, reporting it. Well, if you take their word for it, okay, if you listen to some of the referees that have been charged, put away, and back now, are saying that they work specifically with certain travel agents. They knew exactly what they were doing. They gave her kickbacks. Like, I mean, there was other things. So people believe whoever they want to believe. Right. But just, yeah. So in 1993, the IRS received a tip that the referees were not declaring the airline ticket money as income, resulting in the IRS launching Operation Slam Dunk again.
It's a rat.
Yeah. On September 20th, 1994, IRS announced its investigation and notified more than 50 referees that they're part of the criminal tax investigation. The estimated cash received ranged from anywhere from $8,000 to $100,000.
Wow.
Like during that. Yes.
It's a huge range. 8,000 to 100,000?
So, well, yeah. That's a big, well, I think because some were hiding it and others, like I said, worked and did it. Like,
some people are only kind of bad.
Yeah, yes.
So over the next 4 years, the cases grew and dragged on, resulting in 25 referees being turned over to the IRS Civil Division to be audited. Although the amount of lost tax revenue did not reach IRS guidelines for criminal prosecution, the U.S. Department of Justice still decided to indict 12 referees. So here comes the aftermath. 11 of the 12 referees indicted in 1998 pleaded guilty, with only Steve Javi, you might recognize the name, taking the case to trial, and he was successfully acquitted. More referees would become involved, with a total of, so he was able to show that, I guess, he didn't know, like somehow he was able to prove he was not one that was like working with the travel agent and, you know, doing all that. So he was acquitted. More referees would become involved, with a total of 43 choosing to plea bargain. Those 43 might have been working with that travel agent. The only additional referee to take his case to trial would be Ken Maurer, another name you might recognize, later found guilty. So where Steve Javi was acquitted, Maurer was later found guilty. Wow. So all the referees involved were forced to resign from the NBA, but were subsequently rehired after their guilty pleas.
Terrific.
So notable consequences. Jesse Ray Kersey pled guilty in 97, was sentenced to 3 years probation, ordered to pay $20,000 fine, and file accurate amended tax return and pay all taxes back with interest and penalties owed. George Tolliver pled guilty to one count of filing a false tax return, and was confined to 6 months of house arrest, placed on probation for 2 years in order to complete 100 hours of community service and pay a $10,000 fine. Steve Javi was only one to take his case to trial out of the original 12. He was acquitted more than 4 years after the investigation began. He argued that he didn't owe taxes on more than $84,000 in income over 3 years because the money was value earned from frequent flyer miles, which are non-taxable. The IRS case was cross-examined and put under much scrutiny when asked why only some of the referees involved were indicted, and questioning inconsistencies submitted as evidence by the IRS. Ken Maurer was the only referee to be found guilty when he refused to accept a plea bargain. Maurer was convicted of a felony, 3 counts of tax evasion, and 1 count of obstruction of justice. He was confined to house arrest for 5 months, 3 years of supervised release, and 800 hours of community service. After the sentence, Maurer remarked, "I'm not saying a mistake was made. I'm not saying I've never made a mistake, but I never intended to commit a criminal act. I stood up for what I believe in. That's the only way I know how to live my life." After the punishment was served, Maurer was reinstated and continues his NBA referee career.
Yeah, let me speak for everyone here and just real quick say, fuck Kevin Maurer. I think everyone can agree there.
Yeah. Can I also just say that I think it's funny the NBA, there's been multiple weird scandals with NBA refs, and it's like, yeah, they're going to be dishonest and weird off the court, but we expect them to call games fairly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
correct. Yes. And so anyone listening, if they want to know more about this, I first heard about it in that whistleblower podcast, and then I decided to look up more about it. But if you want to hear like from actual referees themselves and FBI agents and all that, again, listen to that whistleblower.
Joe's giving a lot of free advertising for them. They're good. I need to give
them a listen. Like, it's like 8 episodes of crazy stories.
Wow. I have to check it out.
I wrote it down.
And a bunch of them, like, I mean, the affairs, like, there, I mean, there's all kinds of, like, shady.
Yeah. Yep. If you want a scandal, this is touching on what you just said, Johnny. If you want a scandal, just go find an NBA ref.
Right.
Just ask them questions.
That's there.
There's something there that shouldn't be there. And it's so true. What a corrupt system. Really?
And what's crazy is a bunch of them, like, how it started, a bunch of them were all from, like, one town. And it was like, oh, your dad was, and then your grandpa was, and it's like
good old boys. Say
outside of is it, it's either New Jersey, Philadelphia, some, you know, one of those like bigger East
Coast. Ken Maurer looks like he's outside from the Bronx.
Of there, and why like a lot of them had questionable like mafia ties. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ken Maurer has his hair slicked back. That's a mafia member right there. Man slicks his hair back. You got to be suspicious just a little bit.
So true.
What'd you think of that though, Johnny? She's good.
Oh, that's amazing. I loved it. Yeah. And now I'm going to go investigate myself.
Yeah. Next time you come
on the Whistleblower podcast. Yeah. It's always been, you know, I'll always hate NBA refs for taking the one chance at an NBA title that I had as a fan. I'll never get over it. I really won't. I'll never get over it.
Nor should you.
And the fact that I always hear that NBA refs are the worst people just validates my opinion on the 2002 Western Conference Finals. So.
Yeah.
Scott Pollard speaks on it, and it just makes you sad because, like, hearing it from the player's point of view, and then he talks about, like, all of them and their, the convos in the locker room. So, like, it's just, I mean.
Well, Scott Pollard.
It sucked to hear it again. Like, just, right. I mean, he went on to win, you know, but.
Yeah.
He was, like, during that time, like. You know, we thought it. And then he said they were all just sitting on the bench and they knew.
Scott Pollard's a class act. Like, that's next level.
There was nothing they could do.
Good dude. Oh,
terrible.
Trying to go against Shaq, too, at his size comparison, which anyone guarding Shaq, of course, doesn't usually go well. But I always just watching those old highlights, I'm like, look at that. Look at him give it everything he has. Like, Vlade matched up decently against Shaq.
But I'm glad I could give you one you hadn't heard of.
Yeah, that's great. I loved it.
Yeah, Joe, I haven't got one so far that you've given us. And I do urge you, Johnny, to go and, we've touched back on it quite a bit because it just blew my mind. Just go. I don't remember what episode it was, but maybe Jill can just share it with you. She did a water cooler about how NBA originally was in the beginning. This is the one I'm just like is still on my mind of how they played. And in the early 1900s, in essence, it was a cage match. They literally put them like in a cage and just threw the basketball in there. And they're like, go nuts. And the one rule was there are no rules. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, that story just sticks with me because I'm like, God damn it. What a crazy time. Just that whole era to the early 20th century.
For out of bounds, it was the first person to like touch it in the stands. Like they had to run into the stands and like,
oh, wow.
Grab the ball. And so, and because so many people, there were fights and people getting hurt, they ended up putting,
caging it off,
making a line.
We're back away. Yeah,
they had guys stacking on top of each other to get to balconies, like take the ball. I mean, it was
nice. Oh wow, sounds like how we
anyone that
basketball in the whole neighborhood.
Exactly. It's street rules.
I grew up in South Sac.
Anyone that has listened to our podcast thoroughly enough, they're like, are they still talking about this? I'm sorry, but I'm not, because it's also
but it's still crazy.
It will never not be crazy. Well, thank you, Johnny, for joining us today. Oh, we appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Please go see Johnny tonight. I honestly would, man, if I wasn't going to be at the game. I guess I could technically go to Harlow's at 9:30 and see you perform. Or Luna's at 8 o'clock tonight. Any other upcoming things you want to hype up while you're on with us?
Oh, yeah, at New Year's Eve, so December 30th, the 31st of January 1st, I'll be at the Sacramento Punchline doing a whole week of New Year's shows. So
yeah.
come out to those. Those will be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen to your podcast, and I haven't read any of things you write, but I just know I'd find it quite amusing. I just know you write the way I like to read. Like, it's just like it's a whole stand-up skit in writing.
For sure.
But yeah, thank you, Johnny, for joining us today. Johnny Taylor Jr. Jill,
thank you
as always for being amazing. You guys have a great weekend. Let's get that dub. But then again, if they don't win, I mean, who cares at this point? Let's just get Luke out of the building. It's a win-win. Think of it like that.
They lose tonight. I hope they fire Walton.
There we go.
At halftime.
Yeah, just don't even let him leave the arena. Actually, no, kick him out of the arena. I don't know. They should have left him in Minnesota, if we're being honest. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, everybody. You guys have a great rest of your day.